We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Ryan Archidiak, and I shout out to the Bulls HQ podcast, all the way from Australia. We represent, and thanks for all the support.
Bulls fans, welcome to Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the show, one where we attempt to wrap up yet another weird, long, frustrating, and always dramatic Bulls season. 4 years post the Jimmy Butler trade, 4 years without a playoff appearance, or in this season's case, not even a play-in appearance. Still, though, there's some signs of optimism, or at least I'm trying to be optimistic now that the season is done. Maybe we have to really go searching for those positives, but I think they do exist. And that's why on this show, as we try to make sense of this Bulls season, I'm joined by a man who has no problem finding the silver lining, no matter how absurd and unlikely they truly may be. Per his Twitter bio, in his own words, he is a Bulls historian and prophet. Something that I think we can all agree is very highly debatable or questionable. He's also occasionally heard on ESPN 1000, raving and ranting to Waddle and Sylvie, who for some reason continue to take his calls. He also can always be heard on the Big Red Bus and Chicago Bulls Eye podcast. The relevant government authorities and crime investigation units refer to this man by his given name, Frederick Pfeiffer. But to us, he's the most frequent guest on Bulls HQ and the leader of the Sea Red Army. He is Sea Red Fred, and he joins me now. Frederick, how are you, sir?
Mark, living the dream, my friend. Living the dream, my friend of years, friend of tears. I got to tell you, I am so excited about your upcoming child entering the world. Frederick Denzel is going to be doing a wonderful, wonderful things for humanity. I cannot wait. No, I'm really excited for you, brother. You and your wife, congratulations. I'm really looking forward to it. So when do you think the day's going to come? What's the date going to be? Your prediction?
Well, firstly, like I said to you, I think in DMs and as well as prior to this show, his name will definitely not be Frederick Denzel. So that's definitely not happening. I mean, if my name, my child, you know, Frederick Denzel, like it'll probably turn out to be the Antichrist. Let's be honest. So that's not happening. But he was meant to be here last Thursday. That was the due date. But we're recording this on a Tuesday, my time. So he's going long, I guess. So we'll see when he comes. But thankfully, he's come after this Bulls season. Then he has to that's the positive here, I guess, of this Bulls season. The season's wrapped up. Don't have to think about it anymore. He didn't get to witness another losing season. So hopefully, when he does arrive from now on, it will only be good Bulls things that he has to experience. At least that's what I'm hoping for.
Well, I can tell you right now, if you name him Frederick Denzel, he's going to be able to spin a yarn. He's going to be able to rap, play guitar, shoot, dribble, box out. all the things you need in life. He's going to have a down pat. But regardless, I'm sure whatever name you pick is going to be fine. I'm glad though I'm talking to you today because I'm really getting PO'd. I don't know about you, Mark. I've pretty much had it with the negativity surrounding my beloved Bull. And I went on Waddle and Sylvie today, believe it or not. They took my call. Because, you know, Waddle was Sylvie, again, ripping on the Bulls, praising the Knicks. I got tired of it. I got some stats for you. Ready for this?
Yeah, go.
Two players played over 2,500 minutes in the NBA this year. Can you name them?
I'm assuming they are two Knicks players. Is that correct?
That's correct. And wow. It's not just any Knick. Can you name the two?
Julius Randle and RJ Barrett would be my guess.
Yes, and by wise minds would all say those are probably their two best players. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, go on.
So over 2,500 minutes for those two. How many do you think Zach LaVine played?
I don't know. He missed 11 games. I don't know.
2,000.
Multiply.
Okay, just over 2,000. Just over 2,000. So, you know, 20% less. How many did Vucevic play for us? He's our second best player. How many did he play?
On the season? I don't know. Probably something similar to Zach. Maybe a little bit more.
Why, are you kidding me? He came here in March, late March.
No, but if, on the season, how much minutes. Did he play?
Well, it doesn't matter. Who cares what he did for Orlando? For us, he only played at the end of March. Well,
it matters to his body. It matters to his body. His body just doesn't automatically
doesn't matter to my body. That's the only body before. I care about. I don't care what he's doing for Orlando. What's he doing for us? He played 26 games. 26 games for us, right? Do you see what I'm getting at here? Yeah, my point here is, let's get some perspective here. You can bury my Bulls as much as you want, talk about how great the Knicks are, but to act like, you know, Vucevic and LaVine are suddenly supposed to hit the ground running without any training camp or practice time. It's just, it's ridiculous. And, you know, the two best players on the Knicks, thank God they avoided all the COVID protocols. They played 71 and 72 games. My question for you, brother, is how many games would the Bulls have won if Vucevic and LaVine played 71 and 72 games for our beloved Bull? What say you?
Well, I don't know. I would like to think that'd be above 500, but I guess that's why... Coming back to the intent of the show, not necessarily talking and raving about the Knicks and reviewing this Bull season. Like, that's why it's been somewhat of a confusing and weird season, because it's almost been three mini seasons within the season, if you want to speak. Because, like, we obviously didn't start the season with Vucevic. I would have preferred they went out and made an aggressive trade to bring in a player like Vuce to start the season. Obviously, that didn't happen. They went the whole... development mode or evaluation mode or whatever they wanted to call it. The first 30-odd games of the season, it was basically the young guys starting. That obviously didn't really work, hence a lineup change where Sato and Thad sort of entered the lineup. And then I guess that was the second part of the season. And then we moved into the third part of the season, which you sort of just started talking about, where we trade for Vucevic, we get Vucevic, Zach LaVine gets hurt, goes out for a number of games with COVID. We don't really know how to feel about the whole thing, because those guys didn't really play that much. So I guess it's been a tale of multiple seasons within the one season. So I would assume, and I'm hopeful, that coming into next season with a whole season of Vucevic and LaVine, that the Bulls can hopefully do something very similar to what the Knicks are going to be doing, which is entering the playoffs as a fifth seed and having a legitimate chance of getting into the second round.
I think that's an easy assessment to make, and I think that'd be that's not asking the world of Providence.
No, I don't think so.
For us to be winning 41 games, I'll step out on a limb and say that if LaVine and Vucevic next year play 71 and 72 games like you know, RJ Barrett and Randall did for the Knicks, I think we'll win about 10 more games. In fact, I think we'll win more than that. You know, assuming that the Arturas does the right thing and brings in a guy who can play the three and hopefully the point guard position to some degree. I mean, just come on. It's like, it's insanity. The team, according to my back of the napkin math, had 14 games with Vucevic and LaVine together. I think they were 6-8 in those games. I'm not entirely certain if that's accurate, but I think it is. So they were just right around 500 without any preseason, you know, without any practice time together. This was one screwed up year. So I think we all got lost. I mean, just the airwaves today were just ridiculous with negativity, just bashing on the Bulls. And I was upset. I got to admit, yesterday, like, I was fine with the team as long as there was a mathematical chance for them not to, you know, to make the playoffs. And you know, I was fine with them not tanking. But what the heck was Thad Young doing playing yesterday? Like, what is wrong with this? Are you kidding me? I mean, it's insanity that they were doing that. So that kind of irritated me. But, you know, big picture, I'm going to remain positive. I think I take solace in the fact that Arturas signed Garrett Temple. And I know a lot of people out there are kind of laughing with signed Garrett Temple. he understood what we needed. We needed another three. And I think he was probably our own legitimate three, real true three on the roster. So, you know, I understand if you know, in retrospect that if he saw it, I'm sure he sees it now. He's not finished with moves. I'm going to give him the benefit of doubt and hope good things happen this offseason.
Well, I think you raise a good point because the last two games, the Bulls were effectively eliminated from the play-in chance. So they predictably lost to the Nets, but then they won against, I guess, the Bucks C team, let's call it, because the Bucks pulled their starters just before the game because the Bucks were sort of locked into that three seed. So that was frustrating, and it's a tough way to go out because, you know, it has been a long, weird, disappointing season. But then to win that game where the Bulls are now tied for eighth in the tankathon racing or ratings, let's say, or standings, where New Orleans, Sacramento, and Chicago all have, I guess, the eighth spot, let's call it. I was going to say the eighth seed, but the eighth spot right now in terms of the draft lottery. They'll have to flip a coin to see who picks 8, 9, and 10. And I don't know if that was a loss. The Bulls would have been in eighth. They would have had a firm chance at, you know, 20% in terms of getting back into that top four, which we all, every Bulls fan can agree. Like, we'd rather have the top four pick than not. So,
right.
Yeah, it'll be tough on the draft lottery that the Bulls, you know, maybe they fall to 10th. And maybe even lessen their chances of getting in the top four, even if they keep that number eight pick and don't get back in the top four. It's going to make things tough. And you touched on it there, the offseason. And I guess whilst we want to review this season, talk about the season that sort of just played out, like ultimately this season that we've just sort of watched is going to be determined a lot by, or I guess the success of this season will be determined a lot by what happens in the coming months. Obviously, we just spoke about the draft lottery, the draft itself, assuming the Bulls are even in it. And then coming into free agency because, yeah, their big swing was Vucevic. They're probably not going to be in the draft. I'm assuming they're not going to get a top four pick. Hopefully that's not the case, but I'm assuming that won't be the case. But, you know, what do we look at from here? What is the outlook for this team going forward? I mean, what should they do in free agency? Is this all going to come down to keeping our pick and whether we make that pick or not, whether we trade it for an established player, whatever the situation may be? Like, are we all just now hinging on the draft lottery, which I believe is on June 22? Is that like the next major milestone for this team as to, well, I guess where this franchise may or may not be heading?
Yeah. I mean, if they end up with a top four pick, the city's going to go nuts. And yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Like, that's a huge day in the history of this franchise. It's not like the odds are going to be astronomical. I mean, they're not great, but crazier things have happened. I mean, getting Derrick Rose was more difficult than getting, you know, a top four pick in this draft. And if they get a top four pick, there's five fantastic players. You know, my dream scenario is they get in the top four and we somehow end up with Suggs and immediately you got a point guard who's going to be there for the next, you know, 15 years. So I think that guy's already ready to play. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Any of those top four players are fantastic. You know, Cunningham would be incredible. It doesn't matter who you're getting. But I really love Suggs. I think he brings a lot defensively, too. That would be perfect for this team. And as a point guard, I think you can just put him right there and let's see what happens. You know, let's go crazy, Chicago. But regardless, I'm acting like it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Then let's just assume it's not. And then you have to figure out, you know, what to do this offseason. You know, there's a lot of free agents out there, restricted free agents, John Collins, Mike Conley, you know, DeMar DeRozan. I can go up and down the list, but there's some names near that I think aren't talked about as much that are kind of interesting. You know, like one of them we were talking about, like, you know, Gary Trent Jr., a guy like that, Norman Powell, Lonzo Ball obviously is a restricted free agent, but I think he's going to cost too much. You know, I don't know. What do you think? Is there anybody out there that really that you saw that you were kind of like, hey, this might be a good fit for us in the free agent market? Just the problem is it's going to be very difficult for us to without renouncing Thad Young or some players that are very important, I think, for even next year to make it happen.
Yeah, I mean, you and I have talked about this on your podcast with Doug on the Big Red Bus as to, you know, whether the Bulls should be an above the cap team or a below the cap team. Obviously, depending on that decision, which is not entirely their decision, like that will determine what they can or can't do in free agency. So, yeah, to get to a reasonable cap number, then they have to probably say goodbye to Daniel Tyus. They have to say goodbye to Larry Markkanen. They may or may not have to say goodbye to Thad Young or Sato, depending how much money they need. So in a cap space example, then Lonzo Ball is the obvious name, but that that should come at a cost or a relevant cap to that cost, let's say. I don't want to be necessarily paying him anything more than $20 million. But who knows what he'll command in free agency. Maybe he'll get more from the Knicks and maybe he'll go to New York. And at that point, then I don't know what the next move is, because you probably don't have enough space for someone like Kyle Lowry or Mike Conley. I don't really think there's that many other good names out there. The rest of the list is basically just role guys. You mentioned DeMar DeRozan. Like, he's been good for the Spurs, but he's essentially a power forward now. I don't know if he necessarily fits. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, but is he worth it? Probably not for me, but yeah, I don't know. It's going to be a tough situation, because you would have hoped this would have been a stronger free agency class, but it's unfortunately not. So I'm sort of still leaning to being an above the cap team, hopefully signing and trading Lowry, and you know, you can sort of maybe get a guard that way, whether it's Lonzo or whether it's Devontae Graham, where it's someone completely different. I don't know. But yeah, obviously there's so many permutations to how this thing may play out, which is going to make it fascinating. But it all starts with, I guess, what do you do with Lowry Markkanen and the decisions thereafter? Because if you keep him, if you re-sign him, obviously that changes everything. And you may not even, or you won't be a cap space team in that situation. So I guess we can start there. What have you made about Lowry this season? What would be your decision about Lowry this season? I kind of know where you're going to be heading with this one, given so that we've sort of loosely touched on it in the past. I don't know if your opinions change, but this was make or break for Lowry this season as a Bull. To me, in my mind, it's been more of a break than a make, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the numbers, though, he didn't really have a bad year. You know, like, I mean, shooting 40% from 3-point range, I thought, you know, 48%, those are both career highs. To me, that's where Lowry's value is really, that's where it's centered on. How well does he hit the 3-point shot? All good things from Lowry Markkanen kind of flow from that ability. And that's by far his career best. If you're hitting 40 or above in the NBA, you're a good shooter, a very good shooter. And for a big man, that's elite. And, you know, I feel a little, as this season's gone on, you know, there were certain points where the Army was against me and I really wanted to see him go. And I just thought he was, you know, there's so many things he doesn't do well, especially in the defensive end. They're just so beyond frustrating. But also, though, I thought he finished pretty strong this year. I thought he played pretty well the last couple of weeks. And he shot over, like I said, he shot over 40% from three. It's kind of like he's an asset. Like, there are teams that are absolutely going to want him. And I don't really feel great about letting a guy like that, an asset like that, walk out the door. If he's going to leave the Bulls, I hope they can do it in a sign and trade. There's a lot of interesting restricted free agents out there, names that maybe you're not going to get Lonzo Ball for 21 or 22, 23 million, but like a name like Devontae Graham from Charlotte is a name that I would potentially like to acquire, who's an restricted free agent. I don't see there's a lot of room for him in Charlotte. You know, just think out of the box a little bit. But I do kind of feel like Lauri Markkanen is going to be one of these guys who at the age of 23 is going to leave the Bulls and just play considerably better. And we're all going to wonder, you know, why it didn't work here. Like it did with Tony Snell, like it did with, you know, Campaign, like it did with Doug McDermott. He's just going to be another one in the long line of those players. Are you not at all concerned about that? You don't foresee that happening?
I foresee a situation where if Lowry finds himself in the right situation where he's just a role player, he's playing next to guys that can set him up, that he could maybe be more effective in that specific role, like Campaign has been or whoever it may be.
Like Charlotte.
Yeah, maybe Charlotte, but I mean, does he even start for Charlotte? I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. They like to play smaller. I don't know if they would start him at power forward, but I don't know. Like I won't be missing Lowry Markkanen. Let me put it that way. I think there's a good chance that he goes on and has a good productive NBA career. But the fact is, he didn't really improve throughout his 4 years here in Chicago. So I don't think we're talking about a high-level prospect who has star potential. I don't think that's possible anymore. To me, he's just a role player. If you ask him to be anything more than a third option, it's probably going to be problematic, as we've sort of seen. He's too inconsistent. Yeah, he shot 40% from three, but he doesn't shoot the way that, you know, he doesn't run off screens or curl off screens the way Davis Bertans does and catch off the move sort of thing. He's more just a standstill shooter. Yes, 40% is nice, but like, I don't know. I just think he's completely replaceable.
I think it's a little a big stretch to just assume that he's capped out at the age of 23.
He's not necessarily capped out, but how much more, how much better is he going to be? Really?
I mean, if he's at 40%, I mean, I think he can get considerably better off the dribble, attacking the rim and in the post. And not only that, that's where I thought I started to see improvement this year, is taking advantage of smaller guys in the post. I thought this was his best year by far, especially as the season wore on, taking advantage of those matchups and being more aggressive in the post. When he did get that in the switch. And the Bulls were never good, ever good at recognizing those mismatches. And that's partly on him too. But I could also see him eventually, like, going to the Spurs, really developing a fantastic post game and becoming a matchup nightmare, taking bigs out to the three-point line, and then during those pick-and-roll switches, being able to take advantage of a small guy. I could see him becoming a really good player. I don't think it's a stretch by any means. Is he going to be somebody we're going to regret for a long time? Probably not. But, I could see him, like I mentioned, in the long line of those other players of being better. So I am a little bit more kind of torn on this right now. If the dollar is small enough, I'd match it, because I still think he's an asset you can absolutely trade at the age of 23. So if somebody's going to offer him $12 million per year, I'd match it. I'd play over the cap, sign all these guys, and just that's a piece you can move. And I don't think I'm alone in that assertion. I think Doug would probably agree with me too. Don't you? Like, if it's $12 million per year, you're just going to let him – $12 million a year, you're going to let him walk, sign with another team when that's an asset that you're not going to get back? You're going to play the Celtics game?
Well, it depends what else you can do with that money. If you let him walk and you open up space, you open up $20-odd million in space, and you can bring in a player that's better than Larry, then I would let him walk. That's something I would do. So it just comes down to that opportunity cost calculation. You know, do you either keep Larry at $12 million, or do you let him walk and open up that space to do something else with it? So it's kind of hard to answer that question, because it's so variable dependent. But based on what I know now, and the fact that if he came back, he'd be coming back as a bench player, and he would be the fourth best big, assuming you bring back Thad Young and Daniel Tice as well. Not to mention as well that we both agree that Patrick Williams is a power forward too. Like,
agreed.
There's just not a need for him, I guess, is my point. So you would really have to come back at a number that really does make sense for the Bulls, that is favorable for the Bulls to carry him on the roster and sort of divert your plans away from something else to keep Larry around for however long it may be to use him as a trade piece, whether it's 6 months, 12 months, maybe longer, who the hell knows. But I don't know. Like, I'd be preferred to just move him along. And I just think he's going to be a role player, and in a lot of situations he will find himself in. I think he'll be coming off the bench anyway for a lot of teams. I mean, you mentioned the Spurs there. Like, does Lowry even start for the Spurs? I don't think so.
Well, I guess the bigger question is, if you had a choice between Daniel Tice at the age of 28 and Lauri Markkanen at the age of 23, who are you keeping? And I think the vast majority of Bulls fans would say Tice. I'm not so sure on that. There's a lot of things that Tice is clearly, you know, exponentially better defensively. I just think that Lauri Markkanen's offensive skills are harder to find in a big man than it is to find a good defensive four or five. And that's just a fact. It's priced out as much. Everybody thinks like Tice can shoot. He's not a good three-point shooter. He's not even in the same realm as Lauri Markkanen as a three-point shooter. He shot 28% for the Bulls. His career is 33.5. That's not good. I don't think I got frustrated with him taking too many threes this year. He's not a great free throw shooter. 73% for his career. You know, he's a great defensive player, great rebounder. I love the toughness he brings. But, like, I think it's a little overstated how important it is to bring Daniel Tice back. To me, you going forward, the two guys you need to have Patrick Williams starting at the four. If they bring Lauri back, I think you can get away with having Williams at the three and hoping that he could still improve there, maybe get a little quicker, maybe, you know, remodel his body a little bit to be a little bit more sleek and less four, and then also have Vucevic at the five. I guess that's not going to work either. I mean, it's a bad fit with Vucevic. That's the problem.
Yeah. The minute they traded for Vucevic, it was the end for marketing in my eyes. And it was probably trending that anyway, but the minute you bring in a guy who is basically the actualized peak version of anything we could have hoped for Lowry, then it's time to move on, I guess. So with that in mind, let's move on to Zach LaVine, I guess, because he probably was the story of the season. I mean, the trade itself was the biggest, probably the most dramatic element of this season, but we kind of almost forgotten that Zach LaVine just had a near historic season. basically putting up almost a 50-40-90 season, just a couple percentage points shy from the free throw line, 27.5 points, an all-star this season, took his game to the next level in various aspects, whether it was his own offensive game, his playmaking, even his defense stepped up a bit. Zach continued to improve to the point where he pretty much is a top 30 player at this point, a top 25 player, whatever you have him. He's one of the better players in the NBA now, I guess, and that's not something we would have said before. He's a legitimate top 30 guy. So let's talk about Zach LaVine, his season, what's next for Zach, and how he can continue to build, how the Bulls can continue to build around Zach. And Zach is very interesting as well because, you know, we can talk about Larry Markkinen's future, his free agency, what to do with his next deal. But Zach LaVine's next deal is going to be probably one of the biggest talking points of this offseason as well, given that they do have the ability to renegotiate and extend him to a max contract this offseason. I doubt it happens, but it's possible. But what have you made about Zach LaVine this season? Review his season for me, Frederick. How do you think he performed?
I think it was arguably the second or third best season for Chicago Bulls since... I think you could make the argument it was the second best season since Derrick Rose's MVP. I think it's right up there with anything Jimmy Butler ever produced offensively. I mean, it was just phenomenal. What do you mean? I don't want to go down that road, but offensively, it was clearly as good as anything we've had since Derrick Rose's MVP year. Yeah, just incredible year. Incredible year. And I know everybody likes to talk about his turnovers. Like, yeah, great players are going to have a lot of turnovers. Russell Westbrook, Doncic, Young, Harden, LeBron James, Wall, all those guys average more turnovers than Zach LaVine. He's got high usage. He handles the ball a lot. He's going to make mistakes. That's not to say that he needs to cut that down. But you know what really impressed me, Mark, is his ability to get to the free throw line. That's one area where this team really struggles. He's the only guy that can do that. Averaged over 5 attempts a game, continuing to get better. He's just gotten better every year. In every aspect of his game, I think now defensively he's, you know, average, which is significantly better from where he was. So I can't say enough good stuff about Zach LaVine. And all these people had this pipe dream that he's going to take less money to come here for the long term. I think today's comments in the press conference indicated that he won't do that, and he shouldn't. I don't understand why we should expect him to take a discount to stay here in Chicago. For what? We haven't gone anywhere. We haven't done anything. Team around him pretty much still sucks. Like, what, you know, he doesn't owe us anything. He can go if he wants to win, and that's my biggest frustration with this season is that if I'm Zach LaVine, I would leave all my options open. I would play out next year, and then if we don't make the playoffs again, and I don't see any reason why he would have to say, hey, I'm definitely going to commit myself to Chicago. You know, I think it's on us, and not us, but the free front office and the team around him to make. To raise their game to the level of Zach LaVine.
Completely 100% agree, which is odd to say, but the leverage is all entirely his right now. And that wasn't necessarily the case previously, but the fact that he's become what he has become and has consistently improved has been, I guess, the lone driving force over the last 4 years to make that Butler trade somewhat respectable, let's say. He does have all the leverage at this point. Like, if he gets better again next season, he's going into next season as an unrestricted free agent. And like you say, maybe the Bulls don't improve. Maybe they don't make the playoffs. Like, let's just assume that happens again. Or maybe they make the play-in but don't make the playoffs. Then that's a pretty tough position for the Bulls to be in. And if I was Zach LaVine, I would certainly be looking around because there'll be other teams out there that are more than happy to pay him the max. And if the Bulls come to him and say, oh, by the way, we don't necessarily want to give you the max. We want to have a little bit more dollars to keep around so we can sign a few role players here or there. I mean, it's just ridiculous to think about. And your recent podcast guest, who won't be named, seems to be driving this bandwagon of the fact that Zach needs to be coming back on a significantly less deal or significantly less than a max deal. And he had some, you know, shitty post up on the Sun-Times website today about how he should, you know, come back for the standard extension, but miscategorize that as a max extension when it wasn't a max extension. The guy just doesn't understand the cap at all. And he's just leading the driving force among meatheads that want to see Zach LaVine walk for a number that's just fictitious and no player of Zach LaVine's stature would ever sign. So I can see the narrative where this is going if he doesn't sort of come back with an extension this offseason. He enters next season as an unrestricted free agent when he's clearly going to be worth a max deal. I can see where this is headed, and there'll certainly be segments of this fan base that want to see LaVine gone, that will run him out of town. And I just don't understand it sometimes with this stupid franchise. Well, not the franchise, but the fan base. Like, again, it's not all the fans, but we ran Jimmy Butler out of town, or at least certain people didn't want him back. We're going to do the same now with Zach LaVine. I just don't understand what these people want. Like, you've got a star player here. Like, what the hell do you people want?
Yeah, and the thing about it, it's just not a star player that is, 32, 33. He's 26 years old. Like, if he's going into his prime, he's going to have at least three more good years. The thing about LaVine, too, that I don't think is talked about enough is how good of a shooter he is and how much pressure that puts on a defense. As a former player and as a coach of a team right now, I can't tell you how much easier it is. Let's talk a little sixth grade basketball. How much easier it is to beat teams that can't shoot. This guy's got, distance out to 35 feet, and it just puts so much pressure on a defense and extends it so far out that he's top 20 in the league, Mark. You know, he's 20th in the league as a three-point shooter, right behind Steph Curry in terms of percentage. Steph shot at 42.1 and Zach shot at 41.9, often being doubled. These aren't like wide open Ryan Arcidiakono threes. These are
two guys. Last name.
Yeah.
You said his last name.
I can't believe it. I think I'll do it after his career is over. I did it after his career is over. I got a little quiz for you, though, my friend. Can you name the two former Bulls who are a top 10 in 3-point percentage to finish this season? No. Former. Top 10. LaVine is number 20. Two former Bulls are in the top 10, finished top 10 this year. One was number 3 at 47.1%, and the other was number 10 at 44%. Can you name these former Bulls?
Did Tony Snell not qualify because of attempts
or something?
Tony Snell
did not qualify because of attempts, that's correct.
Yeah, right, but he shot over 50%.
Insane.
I'm assuming Doug McDermott was on?
No. I'll tell you, it's your old favorite. Bobby Portis shot 47.1% from three for Milwaukee, and good old campaign, 44%. Isn't that
great
hilarious?
Quiz.
Yeah. we can end the show on that high note now if you want. But no, I mean, isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing when you think about how those guys finished? They couldn't do anything.
I'm not amazed at all.
Next topic.
But look, I don't want to go on a massive rant about LaVine now, because I'm sure this is something we'll be talking about over the next coming months as we try to fill airtime here on the podcast, because who the hell knows what else we'll be talking about. But the LaVine situation is going to be something that bubbles away for not only this offseason, but maybe even next offseason too.
I just want to ask you, though, like, what do you want them to do? Do you want them to use cap space to sign him to a long-term deal, or which I don't? What do you want them to do?
I don't necessarily want them to do that. I know there's a risk involved with that, which we sort of talked about before. And if you're bad again, you haven't re-signed him, you enter into next season where he's an unrestricted free agent, then maybe he gets wandering eyes. But at the same time, if you believe in your ability to retain players, to want to or convince players to stay in Chicago, then an aggressive franchise should be looking at using that space to put talent around him, which will help convince him to stay. Agreed. And then you just pay him his 5-year max at that point. Like, that's what I'd be trying to do. Yes, there's potentially more risk involved in that, but I guess I just don't like the situation where you create cap space, you need $14 million in space. If you do that, you can't really add anyone to the roster. So we'd be essentially bringing back the same team, and we've kind of seen what this iteration of team would be to a degree. So I don't know. Yes, you keep Zach in that instance, but you don't really have a lot of flexibility to add beyond. You'd have to wait like one or two seasons to really add to the team, and I don't really want to wait anymore, I guess. I want to start winning now, and I think that's the best way to try to convince him, and not only just him, but even Vucevic as well, or future players. Like, let's show to the league that we're out here and trying to make a swing and trying to bring in players and trying to, like we talked about before, trying to get this team back to where the Knicks are right now. Like, the Knicks are the talk of the town. Well, not the town in terms of Chicago, but like just the general narrative amongst NBA fans, especially going
into
the playoffs.
Yeah, enjoy it for a few more days. They won't be after that.
Can we make a bet?
Yeah, I'd love to. Let's do it. What do you want to bet?
If the Knicks make the second round, what's the bet?
Oh boy! See, out of all the teams that I wanted the Knicks to play, the last one would have been the Hawks, because that's a team I think is their best.
They've got a good chance.
They do. Yeah, like if they were playing the Heat or anyone else, they would have got slaughtered. I don't know. I already lost this other bet. I got to figure out how to play this stupid song now. So I don't know. Maybe not. Let's not have a bet for now. I just want to pry. Maybe I'll think of something offline. Maybe you can have some of the listeners shoot some ideas over. Maybe I'll learn another Pink Floyd song and I'll sing it over
yeah.
on the show.
Well, you did lose our season-long bet for this season. I think you had them at the bet was that the Bulls win 34 or more games this season. Obviously, they didn't do that. They came close, but they didn't do that. And then the terms of that bet is because you lost, you had to learn, sing, and play Pink Floyd's Wish You Were Here, record it on video and post it on the Twitter timeline. So that's kind of what you're working on right now.
Yeah, correct? I'm working on it right now. Exactly. I'll have it done by the lottery. 6/22, I think, is that date. So.
All right. You said it here now. That's yeah. basically a month. You've got a month to work it out and get it sorted. So I'm holding you to that. But I look forward to that.
It's pretty easy.
But it's a great song,
amateur
wouldn't you
band.
Agree, Frederick?
Amateur, it sucked. I did want to ask, though. I had what was the question I was about ready to ask you? Yeah, like I think – let's go back to what you were saying about Levine because it is of the utmost importance. Yeah, you got to use every single dollar of cap space right now to make this team better, to find another three, find another point guard. And then at the trade deadline next year, you'll have a better idea where we're at. Like, I think the Bulls are going to be significantly better. And then you'll go to Zach and say, listen, we'll make it right by you. We're going to give you a max deal. And I don't think he'll leave then at that point, right? We just got to make the playoffs next year. The worst case scenario, we start out next year and we somehow have an injury to a key player and we're, you know, out of the play-in in a similar situation that we're in right now, we're like 10-11 still struggling. I mean, at that point, you might even have to look at trading, you know, him if he's not going to be willing to give a commitment. Because if I was Zach LaVine, I wouldn't give a commitment to the Bulls at the trade deadline if you're still struggling for a playoff, playoff spot. You know, so it's a tough discussion. It's a tough decision, but I think you're right. I think I'm right. And I think that's what they'll probably do.
Yeah. And look, a big part of convincing him as well to stay will be the chemistry that he continues to form with Nikola Vucevic. I think those two do fit perfectly well on offense. I think LaVine and Vuce, along with Kobe, have sort of found a way to exist on offense. But it's kind of going to be interesting to see if guys like Vucevic, Kobe, and Patrick Williams help entice Zach to stay, let's say. So let's talk about Williams. Let's talk about Kobe White. We already know what Vucevic is.
One more really quick statement. It's not even worth talking about the Bulls taking Thad Young's option. Like, I keep on seeing it everywhere.
No, you're keeping
it's that. Such a ridiculous assertion. If your goal is to keep Zach LaVine, you're not doing a buyout you're not taking the option to, you know, buy him out for $6 million. It's so dumb. So let's just stop that conversation.
Yeah, I agree in principle, but if they can do something amazing with that space, maybe that changes it. But yes, I agree with you in principle, but I think what will definitely keep Zach around long-term and maybe will help propel this team up to where the Knicks and Hawks are right now, which is the fourth and fifth seed, a legitimate chance of getting to that second round, something the Bulls haven't experienced in a long time, is the development of guys like Patrick Williams and Kobe White. So let's talk about both of those guys. Obviously, you know, I don't think we disagree too much about Kobe White. Maybe we just get lost in the anger of it all. But what were your thoughts about Kobe's season? What did you think about Patrick Williams in this season and how both of those guys project going forward around Vucevic and LaVine?
I thought Kobe had the most unfair criticism. I think he was put in the most difficult position of any player in his team to start the season as a 20-year-old to be expected just to come in and thrive in the point guard position. Is just insanity. It's a difficult position. You see great players like Mike Conley. Go back to Mike Conley and look at his second year, how much he struggled. You know, I think it's pretty rare for a guy to walk in like LaMelo Ball did and really just thrive in the point guard position. Even he struggled at certain times, especially down the stretch after his injury. So Kobe White, to me, I'm not at all worried about him. He's got an excellent work ethic. I think he got better. I thought his facilitating this year was exponentially better. And I don't think it was talked about enough. I thought he really passed the ball pretty well at certain times. Now, yeah, he's not a natural point guard, but I think you can get away, you can get along fine with Kobe White in the backcourt with Zach LaVine if you have an elite three defensively and an elite four defensively. That's the problem with the structure of the team is you got Vooch and Zach who aren't killers on the defensive end, and Kobe isn't either, although he tries very hard. You really need to have elite players at the 3 and 4, and I think Patrick can develop into that. I'm excited about Patrick's future. I think because people, you know, are always pointing out, look at this guy, always showing these videos on him. I'm showing videos because I'm trying to tell him or anyone else who's watching these games, is anyone else noticing this? Let's not all act like this is good, because he's not good right now on the defensive end in terms of just sound fundamentals of boxing out players. I'm just pointing this out. I'm not trying to criticize him. Don't act like a child and think that, like, you know, like I'm saying I don't love you. I do love everybody. And I do love Patrick Williams. This got really weird really quickly. But I was kind of disappointed. And I heard you say this too. I was disappointed with his play down the stretch. I thought other players, yeah, other rookies got better. And I just highlighted, I don't think he played better down the stretch.
He was worse.
Yes,
he was. Let's be honest. I mean, I was a big Patrick Williams guy for the first half of the season. I mean, and that's a comment made in reality in terms of based on what he produced in real time. That isn't a comment based on what he may or may not be, something people have a lot of difficulty discerning between the two. But if we're being real, Patrick Williams over the first 30-odd games versus the Patrick Williams we saw in the second half of the season was disappointing. He regressed as a player. I was expecting him to, or if he didn't regress, he stayed stagnant, let's say, at best. And I was expecting him to add one or two little pieces to his game. I wasn't necessarily expecting him to come out and dominate or show more of these Kawhi-like flashes, let's say, that everyone tries to talk themselves into. But I was expecting to see a little bit more. But we didn't. So
I got to hand it to you. I think it takes a lot of guts on your part to just say that. It really does. Because
does it?
Now, yeah, the entire army is going to be coming after you. I mean, you don't sense this. Anytime I make a comment of just like a criticism, everybody jumps on me. Oh, you hate Patrick Williams. I don't hate Patrick Williams. Like, the thing is too, is like these things that I was pointing out, I have no doubt that Billy pointed out the same thing and the coaching staff pointed out the same thing, because you saw it in the last four or five games. They even talked about it, how much better he was at attacking the offensive boards. He just wasn't doing that. He wasn't aggressive. He didn't play with a high motor for a large portion of the season. He was just out there. And there was far too many times he was given 27 minutes a game as a rookie. This was a great opportunity for him. And instead, a lot of the fan base was just like, oh, you know, he's out there 27 minutes as a 19-year-old. Yeah, 27 minutes as a 19-year-old. Go out and grab it and do something with it. Just don't jog up and down the court. Like, I felt like I really was not happy at all until the last few games. Obviously, you should be ecstatic, and you see, and then you see the stuff he says, right, too? But I also do want to say there's some things that he says, like, he shouldn't say. Like, I'm like, why are you saying this? Like, I'm not naturally aggressive. Scoring was never part of my game. I'm just like, dude, you're the fourth overall pick. Scoring better become a part of your game. And even if you're thinking that, don't say it. My God.
I appreciate that he says it. But at the same time, I can appreciate that he says it whilst being concerned that, you know, a lot of the times, you know, hearing players trying to force them to be something that they're not. Like, I'm always questionable about whether they can naturally get there. Like, that's how I felt about Kobe White. Like, he's not a natural creator, let's say, and then trying to develop him or force him into being one may not necessarily work. And I kind of feel like that with Patrick Williams as well. Like, if he's not necessarily an alpha, someone that wants to go out there and own possessions, score on possessions and be the lead guy, let's say, which is kind of what the Bulls will need him to develop into, some sort of facsimile of that, if they can't necessarily acquire like a third star in free agency or via trade. Like, they're going to need Patrick Williams to develop into the player that AK hopes he can be. But I guess I appreciate the fact that he's candid in that sense, but at the same time, a little bit concerned that he has to almost be forced or pushed into being that guy. And whenever you force or push someone into being something that they're not, you get mixed results, I guess. As we saw, like, the last game of the season, like, how does Patrick Williams only get 8 shots against that Bucks team, whereas the night before he had 24 against the Nets? I don't get it.
I know. All I wanted to do is see him just come out, even like 16, 18 points. Just come out with that kind of game. And, I can't tell if he's really saying this or if some people are just like in his ear telling him to say it, you know, like, I have all the talent in the world. Like, his comments today just seem so out of just like out of turn. What's the word I'm trying to say? Just didn't seem like they were coming from him, just based on his comments throughout the season. Although I will say I love them, right? That's what I wanted to hear. That's what you got to believe. I just hope he believes it and he does. Cause I've just seen so many players just, you know, who have all the talent in the world. They just don't, they're not able to have that, the ability or aggressiveness internal want to take it. That's my biggest concern. I always said this, sixth grade on, you know, the greatest players, you know, they're out there. They're impacting the game in some way, form or fashion. And there's just too many times where I didn't even know he was playing the game this year. So, but he's so important. Everything is dependent on this guy, right? He takes a jump next year. We're going to be a significantly better team, you know? So I'm cheering for him. The kid's a great kid. So we'll see what
100%
happens.
100% agree. I mean, it may seem hyperbole or hyperbolic, let's say, to say this, but the fate of the franchise over the next sort of 5 to 10 years sort of rests on Patrick Williams' shoulders. In extension to that, as does whether they keep this pick or not. Like if they keep this number 4 pick, whether they use that pick or trade that pick, and whether, you know, or whatever Patrick Williams develops into, like if you get both of those things to happen and you happen, the best case of those scenarios happen, like the trajectory of the franchise just more generally throughout this LaVine era, the Vucevic era, whatever we want to describe it as, like it just changes completely if this guy can sort of reach another level, if we get that pick, these sorts of things. That's why what's coming up over the next couple of months is so important, not only for next season, but like where Zach LaVine's prime is headed through Chicago. Like, is it going to be where we're talking about this team being at, on the Hawks or Knicks level, where maybe on a good season you can sort of talk yourself into, you know, maybe depending on the matchup, you can get into the second round? Or is there a higher variables there, or more variables where you can sort of push yourself to a higher bracket where you could be top 1, 2, 3, maybe fourth team in the East, and maybe that really changes the franchise. So, yeah, a lot does hinge on Patrick Williams, and I don't think we're being overzealous in that.
I think where you and I are different, or in our opinions, have a difference of opinions, is that I think you would probably think the comment you just said, everything depends on him. I don't necessarily believe that. Like, I think Coby White has a significantly higher ceiling than you do. If you look at every stat that Coby White had, from three-point percentage to free throw percentage to, every stat, points per game, every significant one, especially assists, which he almost doubled, he was better this year as a 20 and 21-year-old. So where is Coby White going to be as a 23 or 24-year-old? I think he's got the potential to be significantly better than you do this year, you know, just a few percentage points higher. But with his work ethic, and I think he's got a much higher ceiling than you do, so that's where we differ.
Well, let's talk about Coby, because it is one of those interesting topics, at least for me it is, because the way you feel about Patrick Williams, or the way you get assaulted, let's say, with your mentions on Twitter about people coming after you when you mention the flaws of someone like Patrick Williams, that's kind of how I exactly feel about Coby White and the sort of the blowback that I receive. So it is kind of ironic that here, Frederick, that and you're actually one of the main culprits in terms of blowing up my mentions, in terms of the Coby hate that I supposedly have, whatever it may be. But look, again, pointing out when players are bad in real time doesn't mean they're going to be staying bad for the foreseeable future or forever. Like, Coby was bad for a large chunk of this season. For like 20 to 25 games, he basically averaged 10 points on really bad shooting percentages. And to the point where it wasn't just me saying he should go to the bench. It was literally freaking Billy Donovan who made the decision to bench Coby White. So again, like, we can say players sucked in real time whilst also acknowledging the fact that they do have an ability to be a good player. Like, I think Coby can be good. I don't think he's going to be a great player. I think he's more likely to be a role player. I think he's still better suited for this specific team, ideally coming off the bench. That meaning, you know, you've gone out and got a real functional point guard who makes more sense next to LaVine. But I still have open questions about how Coby, LaVine, and Vucevic sort of work together, but at the same time, I'll still have all those concerns whilst acknowledging that Coby was really good over the last field of sort of 15 to 20 games of the season. He was much better.
Do you feel that Coby White had a better rookie year than Patrick Williams?
Oh, probably.
Probably. There's no question he did. He averaged 24 points his last 9 games. He had 9 games in a row in a season shortened by COVID where he averaged 24 points. What was Patrick Williams' season high? Like 24 points?
Yeah, but
he didn't do that.
You don't grade them on points per game because their games are completely different. I would expect Kobe to have more offensive games and to have, you know, bigger scoring outputs because that's essentially all he was doing in his rookie season, just coming off the bench and throwing up shots. Whereas Williams, that wasn't his role. So points per game or totals per game, whatever it is, like that, it's irrelevant. Like that's not how I'm grading these guys. But yes, I would say Kobe was probably better than Patrick Williams, which is somewhat concerning to me because I felt, at least coming into this season, that Patrick Williams was the highest ceiling prospect that the franchise has had in the last 4 to 5 years, let's say. But
Jimmy Butler. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it that Kobe White had a better rookie year. And there's no doubt about it that Patrick Williams has a higher ceiling. You're not condemning or ripping on either player.
Yeah, I can agree.
Let's just
to that.
Be honest. Just be realistic. And I thought Kobe White overall this year showed enough improvement that I feel good about him. Let me just put it this way. And I guess this is the biggest question. Would you prefer that the Bulls sign Lonzo Ball for $23 million per year for 4 years and have Kobe come off the bench? Or would you prefer that they spend those dollars in another direction, however they determine to do it, maybe even 4 or 3, etc., and have Kobe White start next to Zach LaVine again at the beginning of the year? What would you have, A or B?
So I would say I would not want Lonzo Ball at $23 million because I just don't think that's feasible. It's too much.
That's
He's a
fourth
answer. Or fifth best starter, and that type of player should be getting anywhere between $15 to $20 million. So I would find a problem with that more generally, but I guess part of the reason why I think Kobe was successful to close this season was he was no longer the lead creator. He was playing off of Vucevic and LaVine. He found success in having more than half of his attempts from the field being from the three-point line, meaning he was utilizing his best skills. So in that sense, I'm not surprised that Kobe played much better and performed much better, given that he was doing the things he was best at and the things that the team weren't necessarily throwing him into the deep water with. You made a comment before that the Bulls asked so much of Kobe to start the season. And again, I completely agree. Like, I hated the idea of Kobe starting at point guard because I thought it was unfair on him more generally, but also unfair on the team. But if I'm thinking about this team, the way it best fits together, the way it all comes together, and if Kobe's just more in a catch-and-shoot type role, less of a creating type role, then to me, I would rather have Lonzo in a vacuum because Lonzo can do that same thing whilst giving you different things elsewhere on the court, specifically on defense. Now, ideally, you could have both of them in closed games with a three-guard lineup. Maybe you could deal Kobe White and Thad Young maybe to go and get that small forward who can come in and play that three position, and maybe you can push Patrick Williams up the four. Like, whatever the situation is, in a vacuum, I would rather Lonzo than Kobe, but it's going to come down to value. Like, more generally, I just don't want Lonzo anything. If Lonzo's going to cost me more than $20 million, then I don't want him.
I agree with you. I'm more excited about Lonzo if we got Lonzo actually playing minutes at the three, because I think he can play that position defensively, and just have him pair him up with, I think, White, Lonzo Ball, and Zach LaVine would work. I really do. And, you know, but bigger picture, I think it's a little overstated that I read this all the time. Oh, we changed his role. It was all catch and shoot. You know, like acting like he's Kyle Korver out there. He's still facilitated. He's still.
Yeah, but not
he
as
had
a
game
guy.
With 10 assists, for God's sake. Let's not act like he suddenly became, you know, Kyle Korver coming off of picks and just shooting catch and shoot threes. That's not what happened.
That's not what I said.
Well, you said, I think you did. You kind of hinted at it, and that's what is the narrative, that suddenly Kobe White's role was massively different. He still was playing
was
the
different.
Point guard. It was slightly different. He was still playing the point guard position, and he played it significantly better. Let's not act like let's just put it this way. If somebody told me the future, if the scientists in North Dakota told me that, you know what, Fred, Kobe White's starting at point guard next year, I would not lose sleep about it. I really wouldn't, as long as we devoted our resources to getting in a highly competent defensive three. And I'd like to see Patrick spend more time at the four.
Yeah, look, it's contingent on a lot of things. The variables determine how this will or won't perform. But I would have some concerns about the LaVine, Vucevic, and White pairing as a three-man unit from a defensive standpoint. Offensively, it can make complete sense. I would still prefer a little bit more playmaking on the court, but you can get by, let's say. I would have concerns around the defense. And to your point, maybe that those concerns would dissipate depending on what the Bulls may or may not do. But until we know that, that would be an open concern that I would have. So, yeah, look, Kobe was good the last 15, 20 games. He was bad, like, for a good 15, 20 games before that, to the point where Donovan benched him. So for all of you people in my mentions constantly bagging me out about Kobe White, as you often do, Frederick, take it up with Billy Donovan. Take it up with Billy Donovan, who agreed with me. And can I just read something out to you, Frederick?
Well, really quick, though. You were the author of the Start Sato movement. You were the founder of that movement. You were the guy who deserved to be blamed for that. And I'm glad Kobe White's brother came after you for it. Because it's ridiculous. If this is supposed to be development year and you're not going to consider benching Patrick Williams for the way he played, then why are you benching Kobe White? It was so dumb. But go on.
Well, I mean, that's probably a directive from AK, not necessarily me, Frederick. I'm sure the guy that just drafted Patrick Williams and who didn't draft Kobe White probably made that quite clear to Billy Donovan. I'm speculating, but that would be my guess. But let me point this out to you. When Satoransky went into the starting lineup the first time around, so the lineup of Sato, Levine, Williams, Markkanen, and Young, after they benched Kobe White and Wendell, that lineup was plus 5.6 in net rating. Pretty good. Pretty good. After they benched Markkanen, they went a little bit older, let's say, that with Sato, Levine, Williams, Thad Young, and Vucevic, they were plus 1.3 in net rating. So again, another good functional lineup that included Satoransky in a point guard. And the reason that happened was that that original starting unit where Kobe was out there with Wendell, Lowry, Patrick Williams, Zach Levine, that unit was being outscored by 14 points. So Satoransky at point guard was fine. He was fine at point guard. There's been other lineups where Sato started at point guard and they were completely fine.
Yeah,
like,
but didn't
I said,
that move include Laurie going to the bench too? I can't recall when it happened. I thought it was kind of very close in timing. So you're just saying it like, oh, it was Kobe going to the bench and Sato being inserted in the starting lineup. Didn't Thad enter the starting lineup right around the same time ahead of Laurie?
Sato and Thad went in at the time and Kobe and Wendell came out.
Yeah, well, that's on Thad. That's why things were so much better. You're riding Thad's coattails with Sato.
Oh,
and you're dumb
get out of here. Just don't give any credit to Sato.
I know I would break it down.
Yeah. Anyways, the right. Point is, Sato's good. Sato is good.
He's a fine
Kobe
backup.
Kobe finished strong. And yes. They're both bench point guards. Let's say that.
All right, Sato's the start Sato movement is as dead as the start Gafford movement.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's something we can agree on. The start Gafford movement was the stupidest, dumbest thing that I've heard all season. So, I digress. Let's close this podcast out. We've been running out long here. I mean, we've sort of touched on this season. To be honest with you, we're probably focused more on what's to come. But I think that's right. Like, all the Bulls fans right now, all we're thinking about is what is to come, because that's the most relevant part. Because, yeah, this season was interesting. We got Vucevic in. The trade itself was fun. And I remember the day when he got traded here. Like, that was the most fun I've had as a Bulls fan. Obviously, that didn't last very long, given how bad things went thereafter. But now we're kind of all hopeful, let's say. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, this season I'm kind of keen to forget about it, to be honest with you, and let's see what happens thereafter. But let's close out the show, Frederick. I've had you on a number of times. You, like I said at the top, you're the most frequent guest on Bulls HQ history. And we haven't done this for a while. You used to come past often and you know, give me a story of sorts from your younger days. Often I find them quite hilarious. I'm not sure if the listeners do, but I find them quite fun. So Let's throw to one of your stories. I've got a nice intro here that we'll run right now, but yeah, hit me up with the story. But first, this little cute jingle for Frederick.
Gather round, children. It's time for a story from our good friend, Sea Red Fred.
All right, Fred, as per the jingle, it's story time with Frederick. So what have you got for me this time round?
Well, this one's going to be a little blue. So if there's children or very old adults in the room, why don't you send them off on their way and lower the volume and put your ear right up to the speaker so you can hear this story. So, and I can't believe this. I think this is the first time I've ever told this story outside of the four people that are aware of it, which myself included, and the person that, well, we'll get into it right now. So I used to go to Vegas every year One year we went, one of my top 10 bands of all time, Jane's Addiction, was playing at the joint at the Hard Rock Casino. Are you familiar with this? You know where this is at? Are you the listeners, I'm sure, but you've heard of Las Vegas, right?
Yes, I've heard of Las Vegas.
All right, so yeah. Oh my God. So I was pumped about going because if I got there 2.5 hours early, I could get right up to the stage and watch my favorite guitar player in the world, still to this day, Dave Navarro, the master at work. No reserve seating. So I said, I'm going to be the first in line, first in, and I would run to that point where Dave plays and watch him for 3 hours. It would make one of the highlights of my life. So I meticulously planned out the whole day. We were going to go golfing with myself and my three other friends. They were going to drop me off 2.5 hours early after golf. We'd meet after the show for a night or whatever. Yeah. The part I didn't plan out well was the golfing 18 holes in 130-degree weather, even in carts. It was difficult. So by, hole 11, we're all seeing visions. There weren't enough refreshments. I accidentally used SPF like 5 instead of 45, so I was literally
red.
Melting.
Very sea red.
Literally sea red. About 10, so I literally sweated about 10 to 15 gallons of water that round. I mean, I was just a puddle. Afterwards, I shower, put my shorts on, I'm still a little dizzy, put on my Jane's t-shirt, we're all parched, and we're, probably within an inch of our lives of dying. So we stopped at a 7-Eleven. Right. And I get a super big gulp filled with ice in Diet Pepsi. And you know what a super big gulp is? Do you guys have that in Australia?
Is that a product or what is it?
Yeah, yes, it's a massive drink in a plastic cup. It's probably, 5 gallons. I don't know. I have no idea how
much. We don't do gallons, so that doesn't make
sense
to me.
5 liters?
5 liters, yeah, right. Okay. Continue. That's a lot of Diet Coke.
It's a lot of liquid, but yeah. I'm suddenly refreshed. I got it. They dropped me off. My friend who was supposed to go with me is so sick from the that he didn't even go. He's like, I can't make it. So I'm like, screw you. I'm going. Watch the greatest guitar player of all time. I'm the first guy in line. First guy in line, just me. I got my golf towel. I brought my golf towel because after I shower, sometimes you still sweat. Do you ever have that problem? So yeah. I brought, so it's me, a towel, and my big gulp. Suddenly, 2.5, I'm the first guy in line. Doors open. I sprint out to the front, get right there on this, it's like a metal gate, like a metal kind of fence. Let's describe it that way. And then there's maybe like 2 or 3, maybe 4 or 5 feet, and then the stage. So I'm right there in front of Dave Navarro. And I turn around, and there's probably all of a sudden right behind me 5,000 people between me and the next bathroom. After you're drinking a big gulp for 3.5 hours while I was waiting in line, while I was waiting for the show to start, that's a lot of liquid. And it became apparent, like, I literally was dying. Like, I had a bladder full that I was, like, I started to feel pain. So.
What happened next?
So, I'm going to pull off a maneuver here because I cannot leave because there's no way I'm going to be able to get to the bathroom and get back to the front. It's impossible. I can't do it. So, luckily, no band had gone on yet. I decided to kind of, like, go up against the fence and take my cup and slowly use the towel to cover me while I would then urinate into the cup.
But the cup wasn't big enough, is that my guess?
No, the cup was, how dare you. The cup was big enough. It was barely, yeah, it was barely.
No, I meant for liquid, nothing else. Get your mind out of the gutter.
The cup was big enough. So I filled up this entire big cup with urine and, with a towel around it, and just as I finish, and nobody was noticing, everything was going fine, I zipped up my pants, and just as I zip up my pants, the opening band goes on, and there's a rush to the stage, and get crushed against the silver fence. And if anybody knows a big gulp cup, you should try it someday with a full thing of water. Run into a wall.
Water, not urine.
Well, yeah, with water. Don't do it with urine. But I had the urine, and the urine basically exploded from my belly button down to my shoes. It was just soaked with urine. So anyhow.
So you might as well just sort of piss yourself is what you're saying.
Basically, the good news is it was really wet on the outside as opposed to the inside. Doesn't matter. It's still a disaster. But nobody really noticed, right? Everything was going good. I'm like, all right, so this is bad. I got a towel. I tried to dry myself as best I could, but it was still embarrassing. But nobody really noticed besides the broken the cup there that I just threw in the little area there. Fast forward to Jane's Addiction. Jane's Addiction comes on. My pants are still wet. And there's a girl standing behind me, and she was short, probably about 5 feet. And she kept on bothering me, like, I want to go in front of you. I can't, because I'm 6 feet tall. She kept on touching me and yelling in my ear, let me sit in front of you. I can't see. I can't see. And I'm just like, please. I tried to yell, you know, I'm explaining. I got her early. I want to see him play. See him play. She's like, and then she goes, if you let me go in front of you, I'll give you a, whatever that is with her hand, that gesture. You guys can figure it out. And I was so shocked, and I couldn't believe it. And she reaches around and grabs me. And I'm like, before I could even stop her. Like, I didn't want to stop her. I didn't want this. And she goes, ew, you're wet. And so, of course. To make a long story short, at this point, you know, I'm embarrassed. I immediately took her hand off from me. Get your hand off me. You know, I'm trying to explain this all. How am I supposed to explain to this woman why the band's playing that I pissed into a cup that exploded on me? I actually didn't pee in myself. Oh, and then so I let her go in front of me anyhow because of it. I guess that was probably the right thing to do since I could see over her. But that's the story.
Well, I mean, she did physically assault you. Let's make that very clear. Like, exactly. I was against. I'm assuming it was against your will. Maybe it wasn't.
It was absolutely against my will. Let the record show. Of course. Would you think I wanted to grab my urine-soaked jeans? Of course not.
I don't know.
Not.
Maybe that's your kink. I don't know. Like, how am I to know? But I should have cleared this story beforehand because I did not know that was where it was going. But how have you never told me this one? So you basically pissed yourself at a Jane's Addiction concert.
First of all, I did not piss myself.
Well, it came close, pretty much.
I crashed into a cup full of urine that was my own making. But it was I was literally like 2 seconds away from placing that cup like in that well there, and I would have been fine. But the band went on right at that time, pushed me right into the, I got pushed right into the thing, and it exploded on my pants. That's a good story.
That was a good story. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're one of now. You're the fifth person. Well, I guess everybody's listening. This would how many people we got? 9 or 10? Oh,
tens, hundreds of thousands at least.
So what's the moral of the story? Number one, always be aware of your urine content before a show. Right. Don't drink a big gulp or super big gulp. And don't golf 18 holes in 130 degree weather. So is that pretty good? I think that's a good
story. And to that moral of the story, maybe to close this podcast, I need to go to the toilet. So let's wrap things up because I don't have a big container within hand distance to pee in a bloody container there. And
Wouldn't it be funny if she's listening to this show? She'll remember.
I'm pretty confident that she's not.
I told her, but the good thing is I'm proud of myself. I said, I don't approve of that. I didn't say it like that because the band was playing, but I don't approve of that. You can go in front of me. I don't even want that. I'm very proud of myself.
Well, such a gentleman. I mean, a gentleman that pisses all over himself, but such a gentleman. Such a gentleman. But yeah, great story, Frederick, but let's call it there because that almost is a nice microcosm of this bull season almost to a degree when you think about it. Like you're planning for a big, great season. You're going to this Jane's Addiction concert, which is the equivalent of the Vucevic trade. But then when you're there, you're just hoping for better days thereafter. So looping it all back, it does kind of make sense.
It does. Symbolic for the whole year. You're right.
Exactly.
Anyhow, my friend, I got to get my beauty sleep, but it was always enjoyable. And I can't believe I never mentioned that story to you. That was a pretty prominent one that my friends still laugh at today.
I know, that's a good one. Well, next time I have you on, I'll come prepared with another good story. But I certainly appreciate this one. But one final question before I let you go. Is Denzel back next season?
Well, he'll be back in the NBA. I have no doubts, no qualms about that. But, I think, unfortunately... I thought it was fitting. He was 0-for-7 in his second to last game. I didn't. Did you get it? 0-for-7. 7, pick a 7. I don't want to go through the whole prediction, but 0-7 was hurtful.
There you go. All right, Frederick. Well, I appreciate you coming on and stopping by, my friend. If this is the last podcast I do before my son arrives, then it's been a memorable one. But before you go, tell the people where they can follow you online.
Chicago Bulls, well, obviously the Big Red Bus with the great one, Doug Tonis, who's doing much better. Thanks for your thoughts and prayers with his unfortunate blood clot, but he's rocking and rolling, and he'll be back soon. Also, Chicago Bullseye, you know where to get me in on Twitter. Anybody who's listening to this show probably knows me. But hey, man, brother, I wish you the best. It's a life-changing event, having a child. I always say the center of your universe goes from you to that child, and you're never the same, but it's a good ride. It's a great ride, and you're going to do great, and I can't wait to meet Frederick Denzel.
Thank you for those kind words up until the last 5 words. That was really nice of you to say, but I do appreciate that. But thank you, Frederick. We'll be speaking soon anyway over the off season. I'm sure we'll be doing many more of these podcasts. In fact, you and I discussed maybe we could do some short mini episodes where we pick a specific topic that you and I generally argue about and actually get it on record for a change, whether it's David Mwaba versus Jabari Parker, the Butler trade, how Dwayne Wade sucks, all those sorts of things. You and I will be doing some mini pods on those sorts of topics as we go through the doldrums of the off season. So I'm sure we'll be speaking soon nonetheless. But that was very nice of you to say, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks, brother. Have a good one, Mark. And Godspeed, Bulls fans.
Exactly, yeah. And Bulls fans, whilst you're out there following Frederick, you can follow me too on Twitter at MK Hoops. Follow the podcast too at Bulls HQ Pod. If you want to link to the Bulls HQ Discord through the off-season, now that we're in the off-season, shoot me a DM on Twitter and I will drop you a link to that. You'll get an invitation to become part of the Bulls HQ Discord. Frederick is in there, supposedly, never comes past, but he also is part of it. He's very rude and never joins us in there. But nonetheless, if you want to be part of it, just drop me a DM. You can be. As I mentioned there, I've got a child arriving fairly soon, so I don't know what my podcasting schedule will be like, but whenever I get a chance, whenever I'm not tending to a crying infant and those sorts of things, then I'll try to get podcasts out. But obviously, we'll see how that transpires. You know where to find me on all the usual spots, usual podcasting spots. But in the interim, 5-star reviews, drop a link, tell your friends about Bulls HQ, all that good stuff. But enough shameless plugs in this situation here. I'm done. This podcast has gone way long. I don't even know how to think after that story, to be honest with you. But we'll wrap it up here. Thank you for tuning in, Bulls fans. Thank you for sticking by Bulls HQ through this weird, stupid Bulls season. And we'll have much more Bulls content coming over the next couple of months. But I appreciate everyone for tuning in. Thank you, and speak soon.
Amira Rose Davis, historian and co-host of the sports podcast Burn It All Down. And now I'm hosting the new season of American Prodigy, all about Black girls in gymnastics. For the last 40 years, Black gymnasts have moved from the margins to the core of the sport and changed gymnastics along the way. Now they tell their stories. You'll meet trailblazers like Diane Durham, superstars like Jordan Chiles, and everyone in between. Listen to American Prodigies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.